It's a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Miami Heat won a double overtime thriller against the Nuggets. We'll recap that game and how it impacts Miami's playoff position.
Then we'll go to Twitter to answer your questions about the game, spotlight a pair of impressive performances, including a career high in points from James Johnson. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer. I cover the Heat for SB Nation, allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomel13.
It took two overtime periods and 290 points to decide the outcome, but the Miami Heat beat the Nuggets 149-141 in double overtime in one of the more thrilling games of the season, David. As with most games that go into extra time, it came down to the final play a few different times. Nikola Jokic made a game-tying tip-in on Denver's final possession of regulation to send it in the first overtime period. And in that period, James Johnson missed a shot at the end that could have won the game, but in the second overtime, Miami took care of business. James Johnson, again, scored 10 points in the final overtime period. The Heat won the game. They move up into sole position of seventh place, thanks to Milwaukee also losing tonight. So now Miami, seventh place in the East. David, that was quite a game and an impressive win by the Heat against a team that was motivated to win this one.
Absolutely. Look, it was the highest scoring game in Heat history. 30 years of Miami Heat basketball, and this was the highest scoring regular season game of all time. And the highest scoring game of the season in particular. So Miami eclipsing the 148 points scored by Oklahoma City earlier this year. But yes, absolutely a great win for them over a team that was on the second game of a seven-game
road trip.
That's the word I'm looking for. And it was a really good game for them, I think. Look, you know, one of the things that we had talked about early was them avoiding a double-digit deficit, and they did do that, unfortunately, in the first quarter. They were down by 11 points, but they were able to claw their way back, took a lead, and they kind of went back and forth for most of the game. I didn't like the play calling either at the end of overtime or in the at the end of regular season, regular time either. So I'm not quite sure if that
you
was –
You did not like their play though?
I did not like those calls. I think Josh Richardson at the end of regular time was a bad play. Going up against Millsap, seemed like he was kind of falling out of bounds there, lost his balance. Look, you have to give credit to Millsap for being a good defender, but at the same time, I don't know why they wouldn't have gone to Dragic, who just seconds before had gone to the line for two free throws, nailed both, and has shown over the past three games where he's been handling the ball much more in Dwayne Wade's absence that he can take over games late. Yeah, and I don't know why they didn't go to Dragic. Then in the first overtime, they go to James Johnson. He milks the clock for every second, gets a good look at the basket, managed to get two defenders up in the air, thought he was fouled. I didn't see much contact, but it didn't seem like the right play call, to be honest with you.
It seemed like he tried to draw the foul instead of just take the shot clean. And look, I get it at that point. Like I understand that trying to do that, if you thought you could draw the contact, I don't have a problem with it. I'm with you. I didn't really understand the play calling, late. They go to Goran Dragic late. He hits the two free throws and that made sense, right? Cause Dragic, he did that thing that he does in the last few games where he gets into the lane, spins around a little bit and gets a shot. Maybe Spoelstra saw something that he didn't necessarily like there and decided he wanted to go in another direction. The Josh Richardson play call, I didn't necessarily have a problem with. I think that it looked like, and that was right, that was the one at the end of regulation, like you said, and it looked like the Heat were trying to force a switch there by sending Olynyk up to set a screen for Richardson.
Right. Yeah.
But Denver was smart in not switching it at that point. Mike Malone, their head coach, must have told them, look, we're not switching on this possession because they're going to try to get us to switch to kind of get Josh Richardson against Jokic, who's not good in handling pick and rolls. And so they didn't switch, and Millsap ended up sticking to Richardson. I think Richardson was a little surprised by that, and that's why the shot ended up looking wonky, like you said, kind of falling away there on the baseline. Didn't love the play call. I kind of do wish that they would have went to Goran Dragic, but also not – I'm not going to have a problem if they go to Josh Richardson in that situation, especially since they had just gone to Goran Dragic.
Maybe.
But the James Johnson thing was a little weird. That was weird. And it seemed like Spoelstra was just sort of like, okay, you get a turn, you get a turn, you get a turn. And maybe that's what the case is going to be when there is no Dwayne Wade. But I thought Goran Dragic, like you said, was up for that challenge in the last few games. So I don't know what the situation was that Spoelstra decided he wanted to get away from that. But it was kind of weird. I was with you. I didn't necessarily agree with it.
I guess we're just lucky that the Heat managed to win in double overtime, or else Kelly Olynyk trying to go for the game winner at the end of two overtimes may have been something we would have seen, but luckily they were able to take care of business. It was still a good game. Look, I mean, Denver's kind of scrambling a little bit. They're not very good defensively. We saw that. Miami was able to kind of keep pace with them in a high-scoring game, obviously, and that was something that we wondered whether or not they'd be able to do. You know, it's the first game back after a three-game road trip. That tends to be a trap game for a lot of teams. But both teams seemed really engaged. Well, at least Denver seemed mostly engaged early on. And then Miami was able to kind of find their rhythm soon enough so that it wasn't a major problem. And I think they did a pretty good job, despite not being with they didn't have Hassan Whiteside. They still were without Dwayne Wade. And overall, I still think they played a really solid game.
The Nuggets were without Gary Harris. They didn't play Trey Lyles, which I thought was strange.
That was, yeah.
That was weird, right?
Run there. Yeah, he had a really good month there, I think, where he was like – he was really, really particularly – I want to say it was like December, January, somewhere around that stretch where he was really playing like incredibly impressively, shooting from the perimeter, playing really good defense, and then kind of just dropped off the face of the earth there.
Yeah, they only ended up playing with two bigs at a time, which is usual, but they rotated between three guys, Millsap, Plumlee, and, of course, Jokic. And when Millsap was in, the Heat liked to play James Johnson against him, and they put Olynyk – they put Olynyk on Millsap and James Johnson on Jokic. I thought that was a little interesting. They did that especially towards the end of the game. That was pretty interesting. Jokic also was defended by Bam quite a bit, so it seemed like they would put the center on Jokic sometimes, and other times they put James Johnson on him. I'm not sure what the decision there was, but it ended up being fine. I mean, Jokic is going to get his points regardless. I didn't think that James Johnson got burnt by Jokic or beat up in the paint by Jokic at any point. I thought Olynyk did a decent job on Millsap too.
I was going to point out that the stats for the game haven't been filed. At one point during the first overtime, I think it's reported that the stat calculating machinery actually just fell apart, and it hasn't been able to provide any stats as of this point. So it does kind of impact our ability to say, well, who did what and what, you know, how many points such a player got, etc. So just bear with us. We'll try to do our best job here.
Yeah, maybe by the time you guys hear this podcast, because we're recording this Monday night, maybe by the time you guys hear this Tuesday morning, you'll be able to go and log in and find those stats. But it's weird. That happened, David, that happened to me in a game in Sacramento, I think last month, where the stats just stopped working and nobody had stats for the game. It was crazy.
Interesting.
All right, let's move on to our Twitter questions next, the ones that you guys sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. But first, it's time to talk to you about the boatload of money that you can make this week by betting at MyBookie. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect time to get in the action. The madness of March is here, guys. Lay down some money, score big on college hoops. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and our listeners. That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie, where you win and they pay. Fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They have in-game live betting, so you can place a bet after tip-off. Place it after halftime, whenever you want. Join now and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. You can even enter for a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge. All you have to do is use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. NBA. So visit MyBookie today. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a 50% bonus on top of your first deposit. Play, win, and get paid at MyBookie.ag. All right, let's get to your Twitter questions. This first one comes from Eddie, who writes in, James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and Goran Dragic have stepped up over the last few games, even if the overall record over the past couple games doesn't show that. Are the Heat heating up just in time for the playoffs next month? What do you think?
I can't say that they're heating up, to be honest with you. I think the fact that the games that they've played well in, they've still lost a couple of those, particularly on that road trip starting off 0-2. I know it was against a good Portland team, and they just kind of fell apart against Sacramento. It's good to have them feel confident as the season winds down, as they kind of make that playoff push. I think they have to take over the scoring. You know, unfortunately, Dwayne Wade has taken up a bigger role than we anticipated when he came back to this team, and they're kind of come to rely on Wade's scoring. But it's nice to know that they still have other players capable of filling in on a nightly basis. I just think it's that, though. It's just players stepping up to make up for the loss of Whiteside and Wade, having to provide big numbers and produce more on a nightly basis. So I'm not sure if it's heating up so much as just kind of filling the gap and doing what they can. Once those two players come back to the lineup, I would imagine that everybody's numbers are going to regress. It's not like all of a sudden we're going to have 130-point average scores or anything like that. So as much as I've enjoyed seeing Goran be the leading scorer on this team, and a night like tonight when James Johnson was absolutely phenomenal and worth every penny that they signed him for this past offseason, I don't know if that's going to be the norm once Whiteside and Wade return to the lineup. You disagree?
I think I disagree. I think that this team is as healthy as it's been,
okay,
despite Wade and Whiteside being out.
Sure.
And the guys are playing really well. I mean, I look at a guy like Josh Richardson, who, yeah, is kind of hit or miss. He had a good game tonight versus Denver. Justice Winslow has never been playing better. Goran Dragic has never played better than he has right now. You know, and when they get Wade and Whiteside back, I the hierarchy is there. I mean, Whiteside replaces Bam, and Bam sees a lot fewer minutes where he's been so effective in less minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And if Whiteside continues to play at the level he was playing at before his injury, that would be really good for him. I think Miami right now is sort of, I'm going to generalize. I'm not going to say on a game to game basis that this is going to be the case, but they are playing the best basketball that they have all season. I think, I mean, it seems to me that that's what it is. They have been so inconsistent all year. They are playing their best right now. I mean, yeah, they had that run in December, but I do think that they're in a good position. I mean, look at teams like Denver, for example, or Boston, who's so injury, ridden, and that's a really bad spot to be in. I think Miami hasn't played better than they have right now. This is as good as they've played. So I kind of like where they're at.
So
I feel optimistic about where they're at.
Are they playing well, in your opinion, or are they just healthier than they've been in a long time? Or is that a consequence? Is the first one a consequence of the other? Because to me, like, you know, we're talking about these solid performances and they've been great. But Whiteside comes in, and James Johnson's not going to get as many scoring opportunities. Kelly Olynyk isn't either. And then Wade comes back, and Goran Dragic's heroics against the Lakers, even his two free throws tonight, those don't happen. Look, James Johnson was great in the overtime periods. He's not going to get those shots when Wade comes back. So I look at to me.
But he's not going to score like that every game either. Tonight was an
aberration.
Not the norm.
Sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
I don't know.
Go ahead.
I feel like to answer your initial question, I do think it's part – like I look at what Justice Winslow is doing, and he's never been playing better than he is right now.
Yes.
But I also believe that that's because he's as healthy as he's been this season.
That's fair.
But he's also as confident as he's been this season. So I think it's you kind of get both there.
Yeah. I can see that. Look, I mean, with these guys out, somebody has to step up, and showing that they're capable of, I think, boosts their confidence and lets Spoelstra know that he has multiple weapons he can go to. He's not going to just rely on Wade as much as he did. I think he's primarily going to because, well, that's Wade, and he's the best player in Heat history, and he has a strong relationship with Spoelstra. So I think that's to be understood there. But I think it's also nice understanding you can go to guys like James Johnson late in the game. You can go to Goran Dragic and you feel comfortable doing so. And I think individually for these players – that does boost their confidence and knowing that they were able to get these shots, quality shots in a close game against a quality opponent. So hopefully it'll translate as they continue to play throughout the rest of the playoff push and even in the playoffs.
I hope that what Goran Dragic has been able to do over the last few games, particularly at the end of these games, shows Spoelstra that he doesn't have to just go to Dwayne Wade in isolation shot in these games. I'd like to see more Goran Dragic there because he's been really good and he's got a couple moves that he can go to.
Yeah.
Our next question comes from Taylor, who writes in, "We, including me, give Hassan Whiteside a lot of criticism, but games like tonight show that we need his defense." Interesting thought here from Taylor. I didn't Did you? I don't know if I noticed a lot of defensive possessions where Whiteside could have been an improvement. We said in the preview even that Bam Adebayo might be a better matchup for this team just based on how it's so perimeter oriented. You even look at a guy like Mason Plumlee who likes to, you know, facilitate in much the same way as Kelly Olynyk from the elbow or from the 3-point arc. I actually thought that defensively they did okay. I mean, Denver just made a bunch of shots, but I don't know that Whiteside would have necessarily been an improvement. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I have to agree. I mean, I'm Taylor, you know, he's a big fan of the show and he's always very active and, you know, giving us questions and everything like that. But I gotta disagree with him too. You know, I think Jokic was able to kind of bully his way and use his overall length over a guy like Adebayo. I mean, he's got a couple inches in Adebayo and he's got those long arms that he kind of hooks around his defender and is able to lay up a soft lay, you know, a soft layoff at the rim or a hook shot or something like that. And I think he was able to do that. I don't know that Whiteside, as slow as he is in comparison, would have responded and be able to either impact those shots or block them at the rim. Maybe, you know, if knowing that Jokic can't, you know, back down on a guy like Whiteside who's much stronger than him, probably would have just taken him outside and probably would have had a couple of 10, 15 footers along the baseline, something along those lines. It would have changed. Look, a thing about a player like Jokic is that he's so versatile as a scorer. He can do so much and he can also create so many shots for others that I don't know that you can stand, you know, you can put one defender on him, especially a guy like Whiteside who's somewhat limited in what he can do defensively and you know, expect him to change the way Jokic scores. I think Jokic can find a number of ways of scoring that way, and so I don't know that Whiteside would have made a big difference. To be honest with you, I agree with you. I think Adebayo probably was as good a matchup as you're going to get, and I think he was able to even do some things nice positively to force Jokic into bad shots. So to be honest with you, I think he did a pretty good job overall.
Olynyk did a pretty good job too when he was on Jokic, and there were a couple possessions early in the game where Jokic was hit. I think Jokic made his first 3-3 pointers or something like that. Who knows? We don't have stats, but. There was, I think on the first two, Olynyk played off of him a little bit and he started to play up on him on the next few, that he took, and he ended up missing one later on. Whiteside doesn't do that. Whiteside doesn't play up on 3-point shooters. He just, especially centers who are shooting threes. So that wouldn't have been the case either. Also it was a little bit of an up and down game. So I don't think Whiteside would have been great there. I think the pace was it was a little overstated throughout just because the game was, there was so much scoring in the game that was more of a result of the field goal percentage overall than the actual pace of the game, which was still slightly above average. Yes. But it was still at a point where I think Whiteside would have struggled. So there's that as well, offensively at least. All right, we're going to get to our spotlight performances next. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long that delivers the most important news scores and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break.
And make sure to listen on Tuesdays when Wes and I will be hosting for the rest of the season. To get the latest episode every day, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
All right. A lot of performances that stand out in this game. This is going to be one of the more interesting spotlights we've done all season, David, only because we don't have any stats. Yeah. But we've got some guesstimates from beat reporters and some Fox Sports Florida graphics. We're going to work on it, but should just note at the top here, just like we did at the top of the podcast in general, that we don't have official stats. These are guesstimates. Do not yell at us if we're one rebound or an assist off. So guesstimates again. So with that being said, David, who is your spotlight player?
I think it's James Johnson. He had a really, really strong game. He finished with, 31 points, about 11 rebounds, 6 assists, more or less. Point is that this is the kind of versatility that we've seen from him on rare occasions, particularly this season. And I think he was just, it was as good as you're going to get, to be honest with you. You can chalk a lot of that up to a defensive matchup, I guess. I mean, although Paul Millsap is a very good defender, I think, James Johnson was just willing to take on that matchup and dominate it. And he just seemed like he was really engaged early on, felt comfortable in his shot. One of the things that we've questioned with him is his confidence level when he's pulling up from the perimeter, but he didn't seem to have any issues confidence-wise. He rose up, took a number of shots, especially in overtime. He felt very, very comfortable from that corner shot. I think he took like 2 or 3 corner three-pointers during overtime periods and knocked them all down. Mm-hmm. I think he took the – I can't remember who it was. It was Millsap, I think, or might have been Chandler, a defender on the perimeter there. Faked him out of his shorts, drove past him and finished with a dunk at the rim. You know, every point was essential tonight, and he just had a really, really great game. So, look, I think the criticism of Johnson has been overstated. I know there have been problems with his play. I know he's been erratic in his passing. But every time I look at Heat fans on Twitter, they seem to be criticizing James for everything he does. I think it's unwarranted, and I think nights like tonight show that he is a very capable player and one that Miami's going to need to play at this level in the playoffs.
He seemed more aggressive and willing to go all the way to the rim a lot during the entire game, really. And there had, I feel like throughout the last, you know, couple weeks or so, he's really been settling for floaters in the lane or mid-range jumpers as opposed to just putting the ball on the floor and attacking the basket. Miami's been creating opportunities for him. Cooper Moorhead of MiamiHeat.com actually tweeted a video at the start of the game that of the Heat running this play that basically curls James Johnson off of the screen, gets him running towards the rim. Just and they've been calling this play at the start of the last several games just to sort of get him going and sort of get him in the flow of getting all the way to the basket, because that's when he's most effective. He's not a pull-up jump shooter. He's not even necessarily a great three-point shooter. I think he was shooting less than 30% from three-point range going into this game.
That's true.
So, and he hit a bunch of threes tonight. How many? Who knows? But he hit a bunch of them. So it was a really good game from him. There was three straight series during that game where he had an assist, right? He hit Kelly Olynyk for an assist in two straight possessions, Miami Heat possessions, and then I think hit Dragic for a third assist. So he was getting involved that way too. When James Johnson starts scoring, his defense amps up, his rebounding game amps up. He becomes a bigger threat scoring the ball, so he also becomes a bigger threat as far as facilitating goes. And so it all just sort of coalesces in one big James Johnson game like he had tonight. Huge game from him. The sort of stuff we'd see from him more often last season in his first season in Miami. My spotlight player is Kelly Olynyk, who's in his first season in Miami. He has something whereabouts 30 points on 4 of 6 three-pointers, 8 rebounds and 5 assists, maybe 6 assists. I've seen that somewhere. It's somewhere around then. Huge game from Olynyk. Between him and James Johnson, they were spacing the floor a bunch. And that's really what I want to talk about here, because both of them were hitting threes at such a high rate. We mentioned it at the top, David, that this was a thrilling game. This was one of the more fun, aesthetically pleasing games that we've watched all season. I've enjoyed watching the Denver Nuggets all year. I know that you always enjoy watching Nikola Jokic. Seeing Denver play Miami, and Miami sort of match Denver in their style of play,
yeah, surprisingly,
over the course of the game, and then end up winning the game, was a really pleasant viewing experience. And that was because Kelly Olynyk and James Johnson spacing the floor the way that they did, creating driving lanes not only for James Johnson, but for Goran Dragic, for Josh Richardson, for Justice Winslow, who finished a few shots at the rim as well. It was a lot of fun to watch, and that was because their two bigs ended up scoring 30-plus points, which is, when that happens, you know it's an interesting game.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And look, it's the kind of scoring night you won't get if Hassan Whiteside's playing, you know, much to the point that we made in our previous segment there. So it was a lot of fun. I think I'm personally a little tired right now, so maybe that enthusiasm is not beaming as much as it should, but it was a really, really good game. And it was just a lot of fun to see both bigs, like you said, you know, provide such a scoring burst from outside. It makes Miami a very, very dangerous team. You know, a friend of the program, Matt Moore, mentioned something like that via Twitter tonight, where this team, if they're playing like this, I mean, they could realistically knock off a team like Toronto or Boston in a 7-game series, particularly with the Celtics' injury woes. Now, you don't want to get too comfortable and rest on those laurels of one night. There's still a tough stretch ahead for Miami, but it is a very strong showing against a good team. And you know, Denver was, I think, as motivated as they've been. Michael Malone talked about that after the game, that he wasn't disappointed that his team could hold their head up high, that they played with great effort. They went into Miami in a tough situation, and they were able to make it interesting. And I think, you know, we got some tweets about the officiating as well. I don't know that you could put a lot of blame on that. You know, I know I'm kind of straying a little bit here, but yes, to go back to Olynyk, he was really, really sensational. Always good to see him kind of just show off some of those skills, that versatility there. He had the overall production tonight that we can expect from him. And again, you know, we're focusing every time we mention something positive about this team, it's about how it can translate into the playoffs. And Kelly Olynyk has shown that he can have big games as he did last year in the playoffs. I think we're going to need that version of him in order for Miami to be a much more dangerous team. And it's always nice to show, to see him show that he has that kind of ability.
That's a really good point. And Miami, as of now, seventh place in the Eastern Conference. They would be matched up with Boston should the playoffs start tomorrow, but they don't. The Heat play the New York Knicks tomorrow. We'll be back with we'll be back tomorrow with a preview of that game, but that's all we have for today. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Wrap it up, B.